The Choose Love movement offers no-cost solutions that keep our kids safe, providing them with the skills and tools they need to flourish. Join us in our mission to create the world we want to live in, one that's connected and compassionate. Check us out at ChooseLoveMovement.org. Together, we can choose love.
We're just going to jump right into it, Jesse. We've already started. This is amazing. And, you know, I have this very distinguished guest with me whom I've known for many years. We have kept in touch with correspondence, mostly from Jesse, but I've received beautiful, incredible postcards from wonderful locations. And Jesse has been a Choose Love ambassador. He has been on many meetings with us and has been following Choose Love and embracing it. And so, Jesse, I want you to introduce yourself. You are an incredible, dynamic person who is so valuable to your family and society. And you're an author of several books. I want you to talk about those. And so go ahead and introduce yourself to the Choose Love audience. We're just going to go right into it and have a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Scarlett. My name is Jesse Saperstein, as you said, and I'm 42 years old. My birthday is actually on World Autism Awareness Day, which is April 2nd.
That's perfect. So oh my gosh.
I kind of think of that as an omen. That's and amazing. I'm the author of two books with Penguin Group USA called Atypical, Life with Asperger's in 20 and one-third chapters, as well as Getting a Life with Asperger's, Lessons Learned on the Bumpy Road to Adulthood. And they were published in 2010 and 2014. And those are the books I've written, but I've actually been in two more books. One is about different role models on the autism spectrum. And the other one is called American Spirit by the authors of American Sniper. So it's a list of about 30 unsung American heroes.
That's incredible. Jesse, amazing. I have both of your books. I've read one, and it is basically the story of your life and how you live, and you give a great insight to how you think. So you have autism.
That is correct. I was diagnosed with Asperger syndrome in 1996. I don't know why I said 2000 something. I want to be younger than I am. But in 1996, when I was 14, I was diagnosed after a very rocky transition to high school. I've always struggled and floundered during transitional periods. And even to this very day, I fear and despise a lot of transitions with a passion.
So can you explain to everybody what Asperger's is and what it looks like in your life?
That's a great question, Scarlett. Well, when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. So everyone is different, but I could talk a little bit about myself and some struggles as well as successes. Number one, as I said, I've always struggled during transitions. To me, a transition is basically fixing what was working perfectly fine previously, fixing what's not broken, and inevitably dealing with new bouts of bullying, rejection, and doomed first impressions. And I've been at the same job now for 9 years and counting. I'm the media and activities liaison for the college experience run by Living Resources. There are plenty of other things I could do in the private sector. I've even been recruited by Pfizer and the SAP Software Corporation. But at the same time, things are all hunky-dory where I am right now. And I had a brutal transition into Albany from 2015 to 2016. And I don't know why I would ever want to do that to myself again on purpose. But in some ways, that can be a positive aspect of people on the autism spectrum. We tend to stay at the same jobs longer. We're more loyal. We like to do a good job at the workplace and in school. And another aspect of being on the autism spectrum for many individuals is I think we're pretty loyal. Everyone's different. I've met a few people on the autism spectrum who are, well, jerks. I hate to say that. There's good and bad people of all walks of life and disabilities. But for the most part, I think the majority of us mean well, and we make excellent friends when people give us a fighting chance.
That's such a beautiful description, Jesse. You said a couple of things that I wanted to go back to, because you mentioned one in your book, and then you said something that really just knocked me off my feet. You talked about inevitable bullying. And can you talk a little bit about your experience and how you deal with it? Because I know that there are going to be a lot of educators and maybe even some kids, educators that have kids in their class that are being bullied currently, or young adults that are listening that experience this as well. So can you tell a little bit about your experience and what you've done to manage that?
The bullying was almost always bad during a transition. My worst memories are the first year of middle school, first year of high school, and somewhat the first year of college, even though I earned pretty much straight A's that first year. Some good things happened my freshman year at college, but it was also quite rough at times. And what made things worse is I was always compelled to act in a way that was immature, silly. I guess I did not do much to help myself. I've always wanted things to be perfect. And if they're not perfect, then why bother? Why bother trying? And it was easy for the adults and my peers to say, well, you bring it on yourself. And to some extent, they had a point, but it's also critical to look at it from the point of view of someone with a disability. If they suddenly made an effort to act normal and be what everyone wants them to be, would everything be all right? Will they get a romantic partner? Will they be invited to hang out with the guys and go to ball games? Mm-hmm. Will things become so much more bearable that it's close enough to perfect? And sometimes it helped, other times it made no difference. And an example of a time when it made no difference was for 6 months, from my junior year in the springtime all the way to my senior year of high school in the late fall. I was a victim of a case of cyberbullying we now call catfishing. And during that time, I was doing extremely well in school. I was earning good grades, involved in many extracurricular activities, and I had matured enough to the point where I could function as an incredible student and human being, but it was not enough. So it's very dangerous to say to someone on the autism spectrum, it's your own fault, you cause your own problems, because that will put them in a very dangerous codependent relationship with everyone. They'll feel that if people don't like them or they're the target of bullying, that somehow it's always self-inflicted.
So you don't tell someone with autism that the bullying they're receiving is their fault, in other words.
Exactly.
That seems so obvious, but I could see how adults not knowing what to do would say, to the person, you change yourself, so that they don't act the way that they act, completely not realizing that people who are exhibiting bullying behavior have pain within themselves, and it really doesn't have anything to do with you, right?
That's an extremely good point. And as I mentioned, I was the victim of catfishing, and you know what that is, right?
I do.
And I can explain
it. Can you explain it? Is it somebody online that's trying to entice you for sexual purposes?
Exactly. But most of the time, not most of the time, all the time, the person trying to entice someone for those purposes is beautiful, albeit fictional. It's just the stolen picture. It's not the person they're pretending to be online. And it was a group of students from my school, as well as one person who did not even know me from a neighboring school district who created an imaginary woman named Elizabeth West. And what made my case of catfishing unique is they were so desperate to keep the prank going that they had me meet a real woman at a local diner posing as this imaginary Elizabeth West. In many cases, the person just has interaction online, but I had a meeting with a beautiful girl who was 1 year younger than me, and that solidified the reality. People do not understand that for the victims, no matter how ridiculous and fake it seems to the outside world, for the victims, it is 100% real. And I want to talk to you about what you just said, Scarlett, that people who engage in bullying have a lot of anguish in their own life. I did reconnect with one of the perpetrators quite recently, in fact. He revealed that at the time he had been hiding his homosexuality and had basically been roped into the prank, and that some of the stunts they pulled, which exacerbated the prank, were meant to try to stop it. They made up a cockamamie but convincing story that the woman I was in love with had become pregnant due to date rape. And they could not understand why I was not letting it go. And honestly, if it weren't for my mother calling the school and saying, "Jesse, this woman does not exist. She's not enrolled at Franklin Delano Roosevelt High School." If it was not for that, it probably would have gone on forever.
So what happened to that group of boys? I want to know that. Were they held accountable?
They were and they were not, if that makes any sense.
It does.
The rules back then were more lax, especially because the internet was brand new, and they were disciplined by my high school principal. And it was mainly two people who created this, even though there were some supporting individuals. It was the boy who I just mentioned and a woman. I called her Kara in my first book as a pseudonym. And they were extremely remorseful. Kara was in tears, and they both said, "We tried to stop it," which was true. And the boy was shaking in his boots, in accordance to the exact words of the principal. They were both incredibly shaken up.
Well, I'm glad that they were remorseful, but they're, you know, I think something probably more should have been done. And you're right. It has become more prevalent and more serious. But I'm so sorry that happened to you, Jesse. So sorry. And I have to say, wow, could you imagine that all that effort, if those boys had been able to use all that time, all that energy, and direct it towards something positive? Could you imagine what they could have done? But instead, you know, they are tormenting you. And I'm just so sorry that had to happen. And I know that there are other instances of that. And I know that people with autism, Asperger's, on the spectrum, experience bullying across the board. And you're so helpful. So how did you not be overcome with you know, anger and resentment at them? And you know, some people that just lives inside of them and they can't get over it. How did you move past it?
I'll be perfectly honest. It's extremely hard, if not close to impossible, for me to let go. And it took over 20 years to be able to move past it. It did help that they were remorseful. And as I grew much older, I started to feel a little bit like a hypocrite. If someone met me at my age and said, "Oh, you're that really gross kid who was annoying, who bothered all the girls, put his finger in his nose, and acted really weird," I would have said, "Bro, dude, you have got to be kidding me. That was 25 plus years ago. Do you know how much progress I've made since then? Or do you even care about my accomplishments?" Therefore, I seemed hypocritical, and I felt ashamed for continuing to have resentment and even hatred toward these ancient wrongs, and judging them as they were many years ago, and getting in touch with one of the former bullies in that horrific ordeal led to a lot of closure, and it was easier to let go. I was also able to empathize with their situation. He basically admitted, yes, we were asking ourselves, why won't he let this go?
Yeah.
And they were thinking, we've stopped, we're not answering, we're not bothering him, why is this still continuing?
And that's the level of pain that they caused. And it kind of backfired on them somewhat. But I hope that the Choose Love movement and all that you learned through being associated, including forgiveness, because we've talked about forgiveness before, has helped, because that helps you just cut the cord that attaches you to that pain and not carry it inside you. But I will tell you that I was the witness of a really horrific act of bullying in middle school. And so I was in the crowd, but I watched it. I laughed uncomfortably and I never did anything about it. And I will tell you that to this day, that is one of my biggest regrets. I think about that act from middle school. That's one of my memories that, and my true regrets in my life, that I didn't do something. And I think a lot of people are in that position. And, you know, takes a lot of courage to stand up to that. Even if you're a bystander, of course, we want people to be upstanders, but that's why we teach courage. I did not have the courage in that instance to stand up, and we need people to have that. So thank you for sharing that. And I know that it is a struggle. I did want to say, Jesse, that Jen Efrin is in the waiting room. Do you want me to let her in? I'm not sure. Who is
she's
that?
She's a good person. I did not know that there could be an audience. And she had contacted me and asked, is it live? And I said, nope, just a private conversation. And when you said people are listening, I thought, oh my God, I should have told her.
Do you mind? Maybe I won't let her in and we'll just send her the recording right afterwards and she can watch it.
Very good. That's fine.
Okay.
I'll explain afterwards.
Okay. All right. Great. Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to ask you about that you said that just floored me was doomed first impressions. Can you talk about that?
I want to let you know that we're taught that first impressions are the most important, and we have like less than 5 minutes to make that first impression. And
actually, I think it's less than 90 seconds or less than 60 seconds.
Exactly. Let's say you have someone on the autism spectrum who's tenaciously inappropriate, and 90% of their humor is very descriptive bathroom-related jokes, kind of like the humor from Dumb and Dumber, and obviously people don't want to be grossed out all the time. So all of a sudden they think, darn it, I cannot act that way anymore. I've got to grow up. So they make an effort, but that effort does not come overnight. They have to walk in a lot of eggshells. It's like quitting smoking. It's an unnatural state of mind, having to always think clearly before it comes out of one's mouth. Then they come across as being uptight, nervous, neurotic, and that's their first impression. I just want to say, give them a break. Show mercy. Encourage that turning over a new leaf and good behavior.
And part of that is how you're received, right? There's some anxiety in all of us when we meet new people, but I've having that expression, doomed first impressions. Right. Show some compassion, right? Be patient and understanding. See the light of humanity in the other person. Understand that they're doing the best they can with the skills and tools that they have. Kindness. That's your message, Jesse. And that's amazing. Let me ask you, how did you get to the point where you could make a good first impression? Because I got to tell you, starting off this podcast, I was 2 minutes late. We come on to this Zoom and we just walk right into it. And I know that everybody that's listening, is thinking, wow, Jesse is an amazing person. He made an awesome first impression. How did you get to the point where you could do that?
Practice and certainly a lot of traumatic mistakes. Self-reflection is life's greatest teacher and preventer of future catastrophes. Every time someone says something extremely obnoxious and offensive or acts like a jerk in public to people for no reason, something bad is not going to happen every single time. But it's important to understand that something bad could happen the 11th time a stunt like that is pulled, or you say something offensive. I always go over my past interactions and think I should not have said that, even though the person did not get upset. I'll give you an example of a time when I made a very horrible first impression and nothing bad happened. There was no complaint, no repercussions. I was teaching an orientation class at a school for children on the autism spectrum, and my job was to be the sensitivity trainer, and I did something that was very insensitive. I was just fooling around, but there are certain things you should never ever joke about, like racial humor, ethnic humor, and most certainly things related to the Holocaust. The only person in humanity who could get away with that and make it funny is Mel Brooks, possibly. But anyway, a woman who's African-American was talking about her uncle, and her uncle's name was Tom. And I said, his name's Uncle Tom. That's crazy, because that's a term used that's always offensive to describe someone who is Black that's trying to ingratiate himself into white society. It's an old-fashioned, archaic, offensive term. I thought, you know, tough break. That sucks that his name, you have to call him Uncle Tom. And she kind of was a little bit surprised, but nobody said anything. Nothing happened. So I just reflected over that, and I said, that's definitely something I should never, ever do again, ever. Just because nothing bad happens, it does not mean it was a good idea.
You know, I guess you learn either through self-reflection, thinking about the day's events and acknowledging mistakes and then working to correct them, or you work through somebody calling you out or something bad happening is what you're saying, right? And then you are called to the table and kind of forced to acknowledge your mistake. But the thing is, you may not have even known that you made a mistake. And I'm sure that that's been a large part of your journey, which is, you know, saying things that are probably appropriate to you, but may have offended someone else. Especially in this society now, it's so easy to offend. In fact, there are people looking to be offended. So you've made really good headway, and it's a good thing being in 2024 now, right?
That's right. You bring up a very good point that when someone is offended, it's very important not to always take that to heart, because look at the things that offend people these days. The movie The Whale with Brendan Fraser. And I happen to know someone who has lived that life of being morbidly obese. And I have to say, Brendan Fraser could not have portrayed that character with any more sensitivity than he had. It was as close to perfect as one can imagine, but for many people, it was still not even close to good enough. People are offended by Snow White, the 1930s Disney masterpiece with the non-consensual kiss. It's not up to the golden age of Disney to teach children about boundaries, that you're not going to revive someone who's unconscious by kissing the woman on the lips.
It's a fairy tale. Insane.
What was that?
I said it's a fairy tale.
A fairy tale, yes. Some people have too much time on their hands. And in my opinion, people plant these stories for no reason, just to make people waste brain injury over controversies that are just humorously ridiculous.
I couldn't agree with you more. We've somewhat lost our sense of humor and awe and wonder and joy. And we've done this because of the negativity, I think, that we are being bombarded with. And we need to consciously choose love in the face of that, and be mindful of how our time, energy, and effort is spent each day, making sure that we're focused on love and not negativity and being offended. And we just understand that hurt people, and we try to do what we can for them, but we stay in a place of love.
That's correct, Scarlett. And you have been through every parent's worst nightmare, in the sense it does not get any more horrific than what you've experienced. And if you had chosen hatred for an individual who no longer exists on the face of the earth, all that hatred would have been directed toward the ground. It would have done nothing and gone nowhere and accomplished nothing. And it possibly could have been so intense that it literally would have eventually killed you. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you chose love. And I'm sure that it did not happen overnight. It never happens overnight. But as the case with the people who bullied me with that cyberbullying prank, mm-hmm. I chose empathy and understanding that they had created a mess that would not go away. And back to those individuals, I want to say that the only thing they could have, would have, or should have done was to go to an authority figure and just say, look, we have done something very stupid. It's out of control. I do not see it ever stopping. What should we do? And then maybe they could have had some help with diffusing the situation and just gingerly explaining, this is not real. They did something very mean and they're sorry. I don't know if we would have thrown them a parade or hailed them as heroes, but the resentment would have been far less than it had been over the past 20-something years.
Yeah, Jesse.
Hi, my name is Scarlett Lewis. I'm the founder of the Choose Love Movement. I founded this organization following the murder of my 6-year-old son, Jesse, and 27 others at Sandy Hook Elementary School. I realized then that we must come together in order to solve the escalating issues of violence, substance abuse, and mental illness in our country and world. I created the Choose Love Movement because, as humans, we are 99.9% genetically the same. We all need love, and we all also feel pain. We teach all ages how to choose love and grow through pain. It's pretty simple. Love feels good, and anger, hatred, and resentment feel bad. Hurt people hurt people. Even though we can't always choose what happens to us, we can always choose how we respond. Love is always the strongest response. 6-year-old Jesse stood up to the shooter and saved 9 of his classmates' lives before losing his own. We all have the capacity for that courage. Join the Choose Love Movement today and be part of the solution by creating a safer, more peaceful, and loving world. Thank you.
So to those who are listening, like to teachers that are listening, because that's our main audience, and parents, if their child is being bullied, what advice would you give them? And, you know, a lot of times, it's kind of interesting with all these anti-bullying programs. I mean, we've had somebody on here who wrote a book about bullying, and she said those were her worst days because literally they taught the bullies new techniques and they'd immediately use it on her. So, you know, I see in schools today that behavioral issues are way up, acts of bullying and hatred are way up. So teachers are dealing with this right now in their classrooms. Parents are dealing with this. It's happening online 24/7. What advice, you know, especially for parents with kids on the spectrum, what advice would you give them, parents and teachers?
The first piece of advice, and in my opinion, the most important piece, is no matter how hard anyone tries, it will never be perfect. Not everyone will say things gingerly or kindly. Nobody has the right to be physically abused or hurt so much that they're afraid to go to school. No one deserves or no one has the right to to torment somebody. No one deserves to be tormented. But
and
at
that
the same
includes
time,
the use
not everyone...
of words too. Words too. I mean, you're saying physical, but that includes emotional, and that includes our words too. Our words can be weaponized. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, tragedies. Jesse. Oh yeah. I mean, even my choice of a title for my organization, Choose Love Movement, that's been criticized. I've had eye rolls, smirks. I've been asked to change it. So there are always going to be those naysayers. And I remember a time when there was evidently like some group that was trying to, they went on Amazon and they started trashing my book, Nurturing Healing Love. And they were trying to discredit me. And I didn't even know, because by the way, I don't read the comments. I don't care what anybody's opinion is. Who cares? I know in my heart, I'm trying to do good for the world. I could care less what other people think about that. So anyway, this reporter from Seattle called me and said, what do you think about the current goings on with your book? I'm like, what are you even talking about? And he's like, oh, well, it's worldwide. And there's this group and they're trying to trash you and all this. I'm like, I've never even heard of that. So he had to send me some comments and I laughed. And I actually started getting emails from around the world. There was this guy in Australia that said, hey, I'd never even heard of you. I never heard of your book, but I saw what they're trying to do to you. And so I bought 100 copies for all my friends and family. And I started getting messages like that. And I'm like, oh, thank you guys for what you started, because it's only a reflection on you and you're getting the word out even more for me. That's amazing.
It's so important to always understand that the people who are making these cruel comments are such a slim minority. Yes. They are the slimmest of all minorities. Right. And we just talked about the people who are offended by Snow White and the non-consensual kiss. Normal, sensible people do not clutter their brain space thinking of such nonsense.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they're not even thinking of it themselves. They just want to rile people up for no reason. They have too much free time on their hands. And there's different subcultures of bullying, some more brutal and some more innocuous or subtle than others. I've created a type of bullying that's called finding. People who are finding will always find something that is wrong. And if someone fixes the issue and tries to placate their grievance, they're going to find something else that's wrong. Finders have no mercy. They're relentless and they cannot be pleased ever.
Wow. I love that. Can I use that? I love the finder, because whatever you're looking for is going to be there. You're looking for negativity, it's going to be there. You're looking for positivity, it's going to be there. And all we need to do is shift the focus of our lens. And it's a choice that we make every day. But some of these people don't know that they have a choice. Excellent, Jesse. And now I want to move away from bullying, because you're such an incredible person. I want to, you've been on Dr. Phil because of what you doing something for someone else. I want you to talk about a few more of your accomplishments, because really, you just kind of touched on being courted by Pfizer and all these other things, that you've actually accomplished. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. I should have asked this at the beginning of the podcast, but how's the lighting in this room?
The lighting is excellent.
Very good.
And it's so funny, because you're questioning that. I'm kind of questioning, am I using the right background? Maybe I should have used a different background, because this is our starfish background. That's Jesse, by the way. But it's funny because we're questioning, right? That's what our brains do. They question all the time. So you look great. You look very handsome. I like your, thank you for, you show up in a suit and tie. Amazing. That's just amazing. So let's talk about all of your accomplishments. I want to hear that, and I want people to hear what's possible.
First of all, I want to tell you, I love the starfish ocean background.
Thank you.
Because I know that this little boy is trying in futility to save all the starfish on the beach, and someone's telling him, you're wasting your time. There's no way you can get to all of these things before they inevitably die, because I believe starfish can only last so long on the shore. But the point is, he's saving some, and for that particular starfish, it matters a hell of a lot. And whenever anyone is trying to accomplish something, whether it's recycling or feeding the homeless, they have to have the attitude that what they're doing is saving the entire world. Otherwise, yes, they'll have the opposite attitude of, it does not matter, this is just a waste of time.
Right. And of course, as you said, it matters to the starfish. And the interesting thing is, when we help someone else, we actually help and heal ourselves. And that's part of the benefits of helping other people. That's why we're here on the planet. And yes, every little thing you make, you do, makes a difference, because there's also research that shows that it creates a ripple effect. People see you doing something for someone, and then they go out and do it. So every small act of kindness actually multiplies naturally. So it is a really big deal, everything that we do every day. Thank you for drawing attention to that.
My pleasure, Scarlett. I'm going to try to talk about my accomplishments without overtly seeming like I'm bragging, but—
Well, you aren't, because I asked you to do it.
Yes, you're right. And I know there may be criticisms, and I want to say something to the trolls who may have negative things to say. I'm going to go through a checklist before I care about your opinions. Are you paying any of my bills? If I suddenly did what you wanted or did not want me to do, would you become my friend and set me up with an unmarried, beautiful relation? Would you embrace the Choose Love movement if we catered to your whims? And if the answer is no for every one of those check marks, then I'd say that your opinions are almost as valuable as the faded want ads from a 1990s newspaper that you put under the bird cages to catch the excrement from the fowls in the bird shop.
I love that, Jesse. Thank you for walking us through your thinking on that. You know what? I bypass that and I just go to, I don't really care what your opinion is. And so I love hearing the way that you think about it. I know it's going to be helpful for so many people that are listening. Thank you. Okay, so now we've gotten out of the way that, you know, and most of the people that listen to Choose Love podcast, by the way, are just beautiful people. I know a lot of them. They're embracing you right now. They're just in a state of awe of you, and they're really enjoying you, and they're also sending you love. So think about it that way. And start telling us, you know, you are such a unique, shining example of being a human being, but also a human being with Asperger's. And I want people to know what's possible and have a role model.
Well, I want to emphasize that I have lived two extremely different lives on the autism spectrum. For much of my childhood, a good day and productive day in my demented mind was a sick day, or a day when I was somehow able to watch Nick Jr. all day long. You know, the lineup in the 1990s was Eureka's Castle, Maya the Bee, and playing video games. Video games took me to the moon. I used to be very content wasting perfectly nice days, and at some point in the adult world, I transitioned to the other extreme, and now my schedule is relentless. And I've created a tactic called pro-donsense. Do you know what that means?
No.
Because, of course not, because it does not even exist. It's a word of gibberish I made up. But it means combining productivity with utter nonsense. So I think that's one of my accomplishments, as far as time management while having fun. Instead of saying, I'm going to do the dishes, you say to yourself, shh, shh. I want you to pretend that never happened and say to yourself, I'm going to watch SpongeBob SquarePants and I'll happen to be doing dishes, but I'm really watching SpongeBob SquarePants. It's so hard to have fun and waste time. So if you're doing that while doing something productive, then that is just completely awesome in more ways than one.
Absolutely. Do you find that screens and the phone are a real challenge for you? And do you think that they're more of a challenge with someone on the spectrum? I mean, we're all addicted, but how do you get around that? You know, you're talking about productivity, and I find that being on the phone, screen time is not productive. You're living somebody else's life while you should be in real life, looking at somebody, you know, communicating with them. I go so many places and they're silent because everybody's on their phone. How do you overcome that desire to numb yourself and distract yourself through the screens?
Not very well, I have to say. I'm one of those
Me
people,
either.
but as I said, I try to justify the incessant phone usage while doing something productive or
Okay.
doing work in front of the TV and having a hybrid of both. And the work may get done slower, but it's very rare for me to just watch TV or watch a video on the phone unless something else is going on that's productive.
Yeah. So you wrote these two incredible books, and I want everybody to go out and buy them. One is called Atypical: Life with Asperger's in 20 and a half chapters. And that talks about how, and even in your postcards that you write to me, Jesse, it's amazing. They're all in block letters, and you have every space on the postcard filled with words. And it's incredible.
This is the second book
That's the second
published
book,
in 2014, and
2014. The
this
first
is
book.
Atypical, Getting a Life with Asperger's in 20 and one third chapters.
20 and one third chapters. Yeah.
And
And I read that book and it's amazing.
this is the anthology, American Spirit. This is the widow of the American sniper, Chris Kyle.
It's called Profiles in Resilience, Courage, and Faith,
Yes.
American Spirit. That is so beautiful.
And it's also co-authored by my friend Jim DeFelice, who's a prolific author. I was in a fourth book called This Is Autism, published by Jessica Leachweach. She was one of my mentors, and very tragically, she passed away not that long ago due to a rare brain tumor. But I'm featured with a lot of prominent individuals on the autism spectrum in that particular book.
When you say she was your mentor, how did she mentor you?
She started a podcast called Ask an Autistic, which I inherited. I lead a group every Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock, unless something important is happening in my life. And it's a safe space for people on the autism spectrum to talk about anything on their minds.
So, how do people find that if they want to use you as a resource and maybe join that group?
They could find me by going on Facebook. I have a public profile page, Jesse Saperstein, and even if you're not one of my Facebook friends, you can still see things that are posted. Furthermore, I post on my fan page, Jesse A. Saperstein. And as long as people are appropriate, everyone's welcome. You do not have to have autism to be part of the podcast. Actually, I don't know if it's called a podcast. It's more like a support group. It's a Zoom meeting.
Zoom meeting once a week.
Zoom meeting on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. And you're more than welcome to attend and be a guest speaker, and
Sure.
maybe have a few more attendees for the Choose Love movements.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I would love to do that with you, Jesse. We'll schedule that for sure. Thank you. So can you know, just walk us through kind of your first book. Because that was really interesting and it was about your life. Can you mention just a few struggles that you face every day that maybe somebody who is not as neurodiverse does not you know, like what are the differences and the struggles that you face that someone atypical may not, just so we can understand you more. And when we meet someone, we can be welcoming and help them make a good first impression.
Do we have until 11 a.m.? Because there is a topic that I want to squeeze in here that's
extremely
important.
We do. You want to answer that and then you take it away with your topic, 100%.
Definitely. Well, in atypical, this is more like the old Jesse. I'm extremely honest about how I felt and my bitterness at the time. One of the sections, I talked about how hard it is to get a girlfriend. I was asking, why is it that women terminate relationships at the absolute worst possible times, like Valentine's Day, your birthday, Christmas morning? And I'm pretty sure I also added, I'm sure men do the same thing as well. It's not just limited to women, but of course, the trolls, they picked up on that one thing saying I was demeaning toward women. Anyway, there are some things in atypical that have changed due to maturity and the realities of the adult world. One of my favorite expressions is, you're an adult first and somebody with a disability and or mental health problems second. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you an example of some of my struggles that may last forever, even when I compromise from time to time. I have an extreme phobia of unnecessary waste. It's hard to go to places like weddings because sometimes the catering staff are too overzealous. I can say, hi, Aunt Ida, do you want to dance with me? And I turn around and, where's the plate? I wasn't done with the food.
Right.
And to the catering staff, I want to scream, damn it, how can you do this to me? What's wrong with you? You can see that it was nearly full, but the adult Jesse will say, I wasn't quite done with that, but no big deal. It is.
But you know what, Jesse, is so funny? That's what I think in my head. And the adult me goes, darn it, I wasn't finished with that. You know, what a waste. I could have brought that home to my chickens if I wasn't going to eat it. Well, that's funny because that seems very normal to me.
Wow, I thought I was the only one who got upset over something like that.
No, I actually ask for other people's leftovers at the next table because people get up and they don't eat anything. And I'm like, oh my God, I have so many mouths on my farm that I could bring all that home. Otherwise it would go to waste. So you're talking to a kindred spirit in that right here. I'm going to say totally. I just took home somebody else's leftovers last time I had breakfast at our diner. So you're going to have to think of something more than that.
I thought I was the only one.
No.
You know, there's no thought police to punish us for the crazy things going on in our head.
That's right. I'm sure there are a lot of people feeling a similarity.
Well, another issue that has plagued me is not understanding that relationships naturally disappear over time without any catalyst. I'm not good when people ghost me, and it seems like an extremely personal insult. And I'm talking about someone who disappears and everything was hunky-dory recently, but now they've sent the message that they want no contact. That's something that is unbearable, and I've not been good about dropping it or taking the obvious hint that they want no contact.
Well, you know what? A lot of people listening are feeling the exact same way because that happens to a lot of us, and a lot of us have a hard time letting that go. But I will say it's not at all a reflection on anybody that happens to. It is 100% reflection on the person who's ghosting.
Exactly. And it's never something that I'll be able to relate to when people behave in this way, because for me to disappear, somebody would have to do something egregious in which they'd know why I chose to disappear, like frame my mother for murder or something horrible like that. There's some people who I'm not enthusiastic about keeping in touch with, but if they've always been a loyal friend and they've done nothing wrong, then I'll make time to just speak to them on their birthday, on my birthday. The topic that I want to squeeze in for the last 4 minutes is I'm working on a campaign that will eliminate consequences for people who are victims of something called sextortion. Do you know what that is?
Can you explain it, please?
Yes. It's when someone is randomly contacted by a stranger on the internet, and the person who's the victim is enticed to remove their clothes, and both parties become nude, and the person on the other end, which is usually stock footage, not a real person, is recording the interaction. Then inevitably, the scammer will get in touch with the victim and say, if you do not pay me this amount of money, I'm going to release these images to your girlfriend, your boss, the school you've been accepted to. It says on Facebook that you've been accepted to Harvard. Under the law, that would be unlawful to terminate someone or revoke their admission under any circumstances. And the only way someone could justify taking those draconian actions is if they could prove that the person's victimization egregiously affected their business, meaning that they could say, look, I run a daycare, and because of your pictures, every family is bailing out. I have no choice but to fire you, or else I'm going to lose my business. And even in that case, if the business could afford to do so, they'd have to give severance pay.
Jesse, you know, I've been in touch with a parent of a high profile sextortion victim. He was in high school. He shared pictures of himself, and they demanded money. He paid them, and then they demanded more money and to expose him to the rest of the world, and he killed himself. So I am in such support of what you're doing, and tell us, you know, what are you doing and how can we help?
Are you, I don't know if you're able to tell me, but was his name Jordan?
Yes.
Oh, I know exactly what case you're talking about, and that broke my heart. I think that number one, if you are someone who fires a victim who could be on the autism spectrum, or says you're no longer welcome at my college after 4 years of hard work in high school, then that person is a jerk, and there's a very good chance that they're doing the same thing themselves, and they're just saying, oh, I'm not like that person. He's not with me. And the other key factor is when people when people force these consequences, they're playing into the hands of the scammer, because the scammer wants the victim to know that this is going to happen, that their life is over. Then they have no choice but to scrounge up the $2,000 and inevitably more.
It doesn't end there.
Right. You need to stand up to these scammers and say, I don't care that you were scammed or that you have these pictures on the internet, because we're not on the side of the people overseas who are doing the scamming. The money that's extorted, it goes to support their business from mm-hmm. hell, their mm-hmm. computer equipment. We need to create a society where people are able to say, I'm not giving you squat. Release the pictures, because nothing can happen to me.
That takes a lot of courage.
You know, this does not mean people should fall for the scam on purpose, but if they do, it's not going to be the end of their lives. And I'm going to admit something, just to walk the walk. When I was much younger, in the throes of Asperger's, and was speaking to a real woman or two, I have given them pictures of myself that they have requested. So the only difference between me and these victims is that nothing horrible happened to me. I was just so grateful that there was at least one woman out there who was interested in me like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they had a moment of madness or very low standards, because I did not find myself to be attractive in those days. But I thought, what the heck? Here you go. And they were solicited, by the way, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. So if you want to ruin someone's life, ruin mine. And if you try to ruin mine, then you're not worthy to be in my life to begin with. I don't want to go to your college. I don't want your employment. Good riddance, in my opinion.
I think that that speaks to the level of loneliness that people are feeling, that they are open to sharing pictures of themselves with people that they don't know, that are, you know, they believe that they know, but that they've never met, that they are not in a face-to-face relationship with, that that trust has been elicited just through conversation online. I think that's why we need to get away from our screens. We need to get back into real life. We need to cultivate the courage to question different requests and to have boundaries, have the courage to have boundaries around ourselves and enough self-respect and self-esteem to say no. And, that's kind of what we're trying to teach in Choose Love. But so what are you doing to this end, Jesse, to help stop this? Stop sextortion.
I'm trying to get on some TV shows. I texted two producers from the Kelly Clarkson show, and they're probably upset that I texted them out of the blue, but my attitude is I'm going to do it once. It's not going to become any kind of a habit, and the worst that's going to happen is nothing. I don't know if you have any connections to shows, but I'm willing to make television history and be the first person to openly admit, yes, I've texted nude photos of myself to women who asked for them. It seemed like the right thing to do. It was not illegal, and maybe that will open the floodgates to people realizing this is not a big deal. You have pictures of yourself, so what? We're not going to make you suffer any more than you already have.
Right. Well, and to really just not be in a place of fear and reactivity. Do not give them power over you, which you do when their threats impact you so much that you follow along, that you have the courage to stand up. There's research that shows when you have the courage to stand up to bullying, that behavior stops, and very quickly, because they move on to someone else. And so we need to teach our kids how to do that. And I think, Jesse, you having the courage to share your story and to talk about it, you know, what we keep in the dark is shameful to us. But as soon as we shed light onto it, all of a sudden, all the shame and all the negative feelings around it disappear because we've spoken words to it. We've shared it with somebody else. And that's what you're doing to this growing issue of sextortion. So thank you. And thanks for sharing it on this podcast. This is going to get it out to a lot of people. Thank you for joining us today, Jesse. I would like to invite you back. I'm sure everybody that's listening is saying, we haven't gotten enough of Jesse, and there are a lot more questions to ask. So just for our listeners' gratification, will you agree to come back on and do another session with us?
I thought you'd never ask.
Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Jesse, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us. Jesse A. Saperstein, an autism advocate, really popular motivational speaker. You can see he's fun, he's funny, but he's really well-versed. He's very articulate. He's an incredible person. So many experiences, author of 2 books with much more in the hopper coming. He's a respected leader in the anti-bullying movement of this generation. You are also a role model for everyone on the spectrum, and even those of us who aren't. You can teach us so much. You have within this podcast. I am so grateful for you to be with us. Thank you also for being my friend. And you know, you said that there is so much loyalty with people on the spectrum, and I have found that to be so true. I so appreciate you, Jesse. I know that everybody listening does as well. And most of all, I want to thank you for choosing love and supporting our movement in everything that you do and the modeling that you show to the world. Thank you for choosing love, and thanks for joining us, Jesse. Hey, hey, oh.
It's all part of us. We can all choose love. It'll lift you up if you let it in. Let the